What's up, everyone?
All right. We got a full house in Antifada Studios today. We're joined by Jared Shanahan, a voice I'm sure you remember.
What's up, Antifada world?
And he's here with his massive masked cadre of Chicago rabble-rousers. They're part of a group called Lake Effect from the shores of Lake Michigan. And we're going to talk about practicing politics the right way.
So you figured it out?
Well, you're going to tell us. So this is a group that came to my attention from some writings about the DNC in Chicago this summer. And they've continued writing about organizing and, you know, reflections on American culture and politics. And so we're going to go into some of those articles. Who of this massive assemblage would like to introduce the group a little bit better than I just did it?
Hi. So we're Lake Effect Collective from, like Andy said, Lake Michigan. We're a group that does a lot of collective writing, thinking together, various topics. Talked about the DNC. We've been thinking a lot about deportations in Chicago, that sort of situation in the Midwest. We're sort of a group of different anarchists, communists, thinking together, working together. And I'm going to pass it to someone to talk about some of the writing.
Hi. So one of the things that our group places a pretty high premium on, I think, after just kind of being in this world for a bit, is having some kind of unity between like what we're thinking, how we're talking, like who is doing both of those things, and then also like what we're doing together, like practically. I think it's been a pretty consistent and common tendency, like in our part of the ultra left, to have like, you know, some groups that are like purely action, you know, action oriented, like groups that don't necessarily talk about the political theory stuff so much, but are like really engaged and like in the soup. And then like you've got the kind of abstruse, like highfalutin theoretical outlets that it's not clear what the activity is. And so at least in our group, we work very hard to, so we say, socialize the skills like a lot in the group. I don't know if anybody else wants to talk about that.
Yeah, totally. We actually came together while writing a report back on the University of Chicago Palestine encampment. A lot of, in my experience, a lot of collectives collectively author things that are actually just one person summarizing conversations that they've had with, you know, five or six others. But this was actually written by all 12 of the people that had come together after this encampment. It involved a lot of those conversations and a lot of like learning how to write and think in a fairly disciplined way. And at the end of it, we had, you know, written our various sections. Other people went over and edited other sections that they had ideas about. There were debates over the line edits and the content edits and all of that. And by the end of it, we actually felt like a much more politically coherent group than we'd been at the beginning. And so it's meant a lot to us to maintain that sort of, at least ability to do collective writing. These days, it's not all 12 of us typically, but we will, you know, settle on a topic that we'd like to write about and then send a message to everyone that says, hey, if you want to be a part of the Lake Effect Collective take on this or that question, you should hop in here and write something about it. Otherwise, you're going to have to hold your peace.
So just for a moment, let's get into a couple specifics so the audience knows a little bit about where you're coming from. What, like, who wants to summarize some of your takes on the Palestine encampments or DNC, just to give us a flavor of what you're all about?
The report back from the DNC dealt with a similar problem that we noticed at the Palestine encampment in a shorter format and with a little more kind of direct emphasis. And it was on the gap between fairly publicly legible, accessible, and honest, I would say, political formations, which in Chicago at least are dominated by these old nonprofits and recruitment-based organizations that march you up and down Michigan Avenue and then send everybody home at the end of the day, on one hand, and a kind of loose network of either previously anarchist affinity groups or little direct action crews that had come out of the Palestine movement and that really, really struggled and I believe continue to struggle to achieve any sort of like either unified political content between all of them and what they're doing, where they're focusing themselves, or like a strategic vision of how their activities fit into to realizing some sort of revolutionary goal. And
the title of the piece was "Seattle is Never Coming Back," right? So what's the reference to Seattle there?
Well, to be honest, Seattle, the Battle of Seattle occurred when I believe most of us had not been born. So if anybody wants to read that, most of us, sorry, Jared. Right. So if anybody a little older than us wants to hop in and tell us that we're full of shit, that's okay. But our sense is that involved a form of mass street mobilization that was fairly tactically unified, at least among the kind of radicals, had some sort of political content, had like fairly socialized and extreme tactics, and that the convergence around the DNC that involved a similar sort of like geographic concentration of people from all over the country with similarly sort of spectacular goals was maybe not imitating, but at least rhyming with what had happened back then. And we tried in that piece to highlight what was the same, the sort of like disaggregation of our forces, and maybe point at what was different, which I think we've highlighted a little better in our other pieces, just given it's been two decades.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least one thing also with the DNC last year is obviously in Chicago, as it was kind of like ramping up and people were kind of like thinking about like what to do to protest it, a lot of people were sort of calling upon the memory of like the 68 DNC convention in Chicago, and the way that went down with like tear gas like wafting into the delegate halls, and kind of this like massive like public like images of what had happened with like the protests there. And it was clearly like people were trying to evoke that, and like nothing like that happened at all. You know, it was like a very controlled protest situation.
There weren't any yippies fucking in the streets.
Okay, this might be heretical from an ultra standpoint, but my neighborhood in Chicago was covered in these posters that were saying, "Make the DNC great like it was in '68," and they literally
great, like there's going to be riots, and that was the great part.
Yeah,
of it.
Okay. And I mean, I have apologized for some really stupid movements and riots over the years, but if you actually read the story of '68, it was a terrible defeat. It was supposed to be a mass mobilization. Only a small percentage of the projected crowd actually showed up. The yippies who were leading it and other countercultural folks like Allen Ginsberg were not at all prepared for the level of militancy that they were talking about. And when push came to shove, they basically got their asses kicked up and down Grant Park for days in a way that really paralyzed the movement. And so I didn't see anything worth emulating in the model of '68, besides the fact that maybe there was a lot of television footage of people getting their asses beat by the CPD. But unfortunately, when those images were being broadcast in 1968, the vast majority of Americans approved of what the CPD was doing. And they used that as a kind of, that was a good example of how these hippies should be handled. And so I think it was a really ahistorical comparison to say, like, let's do that again. Let's do that massive fuck up again. But the good news is, if you set the bar low enough, you'll always hit it. And I feel like the folks who were organizing in this crew called Behind Enemy Lines, who organized this big demonstration, you know, I'd been watching this, you know, I'm not on Instagram or whatever, I don't follow this stuff, but like walking to the bus in the morning in my neighborhood, it was just like, we're behind enemy lines, we're hard as fuck and you aren't, you know. They had this thing that was just like, bruises are the new back to school fashion, get your ass kicked by the CPD. And it was just like, what kind of Christian masochism is this, you know? And so they called this big demonstration in front of the Israeli consulate. in a fucking, basically in a giant kettle. And they got what they wanted. They got like a bunch of people got their shit wrecked. Nobody could do anything to shut down even like the Israeli consulate, much less the DNC, because they were busy getting fucked up by like 500 CPD people. A bunch of comrades on our side got arrested, taking them out of circulation. And like, I don't want to be too hard on BEL, because I actually like really support bringing like the spirit of militancy and direct action into these kind of like NGO-ified movements. But they had this incredibly macho outlook that was based on a just completely inaccurate version of what the 68 DNC actually was. And in this kind of tragic twist, they ended up getting basically a smaller version of exactly what had happened, only it wasn't very great.
In some senses, this to me also reflects like a kind of emphasis on two different kinds of spectacle in the context of the DNC. So there was the large marches that were organized by these nonprofits that emphasized this idea of mass numbers that didn't in fact show up, and that wanted to project this number of numbers and instructed their marshals to keep the crowd in line, prevent anything from happening, and just sort of create this sort of image with no consequence and no effect on a march route that had no impact. And then you have this other side of things with the BEL action, which similarly like tried to frame as a win what was also in effect just like the spectacle of people getting beat up by the cops. And in neither of these actions is there any like strategy actually oriented towards Palestine, towards liberation, towards like concrete ways that these actions actually connect to like what was going on, but rather like it's this idea that through this spectacle you get this media attention that causes people to change their minds. And by that point in the summer, I think it was clear to many participants that something more than simply changing minds was the necessary route to take, but there was no real viable alternative offered, which sort of was one of the themes too in the DNC piece that we wrote, of like there's this very public above ground space that is just marching, and then there's this like with BEL posturing as this like much more militant space but not actually fulfilling that. And the question of what would it look like for different parts of the movement to actually work together and form some kind of composition that actually allows for strategic outcomes.
Let me jump in here with some of my memories of, you know, watching the DNC from afar, specifically on Hassan Piker's live stream, which was interesting because he was in the march. He was outside, and then he went from the march and walked inside to the DNC. He was really the one behind enemy lines, right? But, you know, of course, he was invited in. And I thought, okay, well, that's kind of smart of the Democrats to have this very popular leftist media creator give him a studio to watch the DNC and comment on it. And, you know, I think it was after a day and a half of streaming, somebody was watching that stream and saw, oh, this guy's talking about Palestine, and they kicked him out during the stream, midstream. They kicked him out. And I just think that was so emblematic of what the DNC really showed to who could have been a pretty sizable voting base for Harris, which was, no, we're not going to give any time to the Palestine issue. We're going to keep repeating the same bullshit pablum. We're not going to have trans speakers. We're not going to have Palestine speakers. We're not going to make even any give lip service to the left. This is not what this is about. And it was a very conscious choice on their part to move from there. Because remember, at this point, we still thought, okay, maybe Harris is going to at least appear to pivot to the left with the choice of walls. Maybe she's going to break from Biden, at least rhetorically. And she didn't do it. And I think in terms of the protest, the most iconic moment of the protest that I think for at least in the general cultural memory is the delegates marching out to people chanting about Palestine and them covering their ears and saying, I don't care. And I think that's, you know, that was really the message of DNC for a lot of us, which, you know, leads us to this current moment. Harris lost miserably. I think Palestine was definitely a major reason why she lost, among other issues of shanking the left. And so now we're in this really terrifying moment where we're simultaneously at the mercy of a Trump administration that's taking more and more power, like moving towards really a total state power in many ways. And there's a party that seems really disinterested in resisting him, even in the way that they were doing during his first administration. So maybe that can move us towards some of your more recent pieces.
Yeah. I think that we're in a situation on like what you're just saying, where like there's not even an offer of a poison pill. It's just like they don't want to work with us. Like in their mind, I think that, you know, our team threw them the election. But I'd maybe like to just, before we get into like the more current stuff, because I think it's informed a bit by some of these critiques that I think we didn't really cover just now, which is that like parts of these critiques about other organizations and like the lack of a viable alternative is also about our side and like the ultra left. And that like part of what I think that our group places a pretty high value on is like the ability to like look back on our own activities and see how they may or may not like point out of this morass. I mean, the U Chicago encampment piece is really quite long. I think it's worth reading if people haven't already, though. But the end of it sort of ends with this this problem that we're in, which is that like we ourselves got lost up in the kind of moment to moment sort of tactical, and not even tactical so much as technical, like problems of the day, such that we actually basically forgot, you know, how to place our kind of political vision. Yeah, that we were communists and anarchists in. And so like same for the DNC, like when we are talking about these like other groups and these like bad NGOs and the Democrats and like these other like more hardline like ML groups and so on, I think that these critiques also are partially towards like ourselves and our ability to affect the kind of change that we'd like to see. And it was after the DNC that I think we actually did kind of pass into a qualitatively different place as a group, where we've been able to like write some of the more recent stuff. So I just wanted to get that in so that it didn't just seem like we were like, you know, we had all the answers always.
Yeah. And I think maybe to temper the previous mention of behind enemy lines, we actually received a response to the mention that they got in Seattle is Never Coming Back, which we in turn responded to. I personally found that a really clarifying opportunity to get to the bottom of what like political content looks like for us as a group. And the way to maybe at least try to marry our understanding of race and class in the United States to the way we direct our very limited time and energy as radicals in the movement.
So yeah, jumping ahead a little bit to January of the current year, right before Trump comes in, on your resources page, you put out a document called Previous Tactics from the Fight Against ICE. And I think we all understood pretty clearly that the mass deportations promised by Trump was going to be one of the major first struggles we're going to encounter. So, what were some of the takeaways from this piece?
Yeah, I think one of the things that inspired this piece was that there was no, like, zine out there, like, in Chicago-focused or even, like, not, like, on immigration and, like, the actual tactics that, like, put that all in one concise place. Yeah, I think one major takeaway was how do we didn't want to, like, necessarily tell people what to do, But we wanted to like compile a list of different tactics from the previous Trump administration, which included like the Occupy ICE protests that happened, or like the airport protests that happened during the Muslim event. And also like lay out how to
Hey folks, Sean KB here. Just a reminder that our show relies on your support. So if you enjoy what we do and you want to hear more excellent bonus content, you can become a patron at patreon.com/theantifada. It's cheap, there's a ton of content, and it would mean everything to us. So thank you, and we'll see you behind the paywall.